Okay, so we have a couple of challenges in this week's parasha. One challenge is that in order to properly, at least in my opinion, to understand the Chet HaMeraglim, or the episode of Meraglim, the sin of the Meraglim, one would have to learn this week's parasha and to see what happens, quote-unquote, real-time. And then secondly, to learn in Sefer Devarim, the retrospective which Moshe Rabbeinu tells us about, and then to kind of line them up one against the other and to see what it says. The most obvious and maybe jarring aspect of this is whose idea was it to send the Meraglim? Was the idea top-down in the sense that a Kaddish Baruch Hu tell Moshe do, which is the way it really sounds in this week's parasha, or is it something which is grassroots, coming up from the people request it, and then Moshe thinks it's a good idea, and then Moshe turns to God, which is the way it sounds in Sefer Devarim. So obviously one has to somehow try to reconcile those two, or to read them together, as I said. Now, one thing that I will say about that is that Rashi is concerned with this, and one of the things we'll see as we move on is how the Netziv responds to Rashi, but as I said, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself right now. The second thing that I think that we need to do, if we want to try to understand this, is to watch how the episode unfolds, because I believe that there are multiple stages or steps along the way, and sometimes we get a little bit fooled because we only focus or hyper-focus on one stage. So what I want to do today is, first of all, obviously I want to get to Pshat, and I want to get to understand what's going on. But the vehicle in order to do that is I want to start from God's perspective, right? We could talk about Moshe's perspective, the spies' perspective, but I want to start from God's perspective and then kind of work backwards and then to hopefully figure out what is going on or perhaps what is not going on. So let's start in source number one. This is already in Perek Yudalit. Perek Yudalit is after the whole thing has already exploded. Vayomar Hashem el Moshe, ad ani anatsuni ha'am hazeh. You know, how long are they going to try to get me upset? Vad ani lo yaminu bi. And, you know, to what extent will they not believe in me? Bekol ha'atot asher asiti bekirbo. All the miracles that I've done in their midst. Now, some of you who've heard me going on and on and on for years about this, similar problems, you know that I've asked a question every single year, and that is, what did they eat for breakfast that morning, right? Which means the same thing with the Chet HaEgel. What do they eat for breakfast? And the answer is they ate man. And what was protecting them? The clouds were protecting them. So if all of this is the blatant, manifest hand of God in their lives, then how in the world do you get to a collective cognitive dissonance whereby so many people are just kind of, wow, I wonder where God is. I wonder, like, what's going on. I wonder what, and so on. And to be fair, when it comes to the Chet HaEgel, it wasn't about God. It was about Moshe. Nonetheless, how did they get there? I find that quite disturbing. But the God quotient, as it were, in terms of this episode, is something that I want you to keep in mind, because God obviously says, look, you know, what's going on? I do all these things for them, and they don't seem to recognize me. You know, it's like the parent who's been paying off all the kids' expenses and loans and debts and on and on and on. And then the kid is saying, oh, I wonder if my parents love me or whatever else. I understand. Finances aren't always love, but it doesn't hurt. So let's continue. In Pasuk Yudbet, Akenu bidever varshenu v'esautcha l'gai gadol v'tzumimenu. And this is the kind of thing that also we've heard before, and I will introduce another aspect of analysis that we could do, and that would be to compare Moshe's response and God's response after the Chet HaEgel and after the Chet Meraglim. Of course, you can ask me, why would I single out these two? And of course, I would answer, you know why I'm singling out these two, and these really seem to be the most severe, where the very continuation of the Jewish people hangs in the balance, let's put it like this. And God turns, you know, so enough with all of them. Let me just keep the covenant with you. I'll make you into a great nation. V'yom Moshe el Hashem, v'shamu Mitzrayim, kielita b'kochacha et ha'am hazeh b'kirbo. Now, Moshe seems to be absolutely picking up on what God said. The people don't recognize the miracles and the things which I've done. You know, we don't need an engineer, right? Okay. Well, I won't say that out loud again. Which means where God says they don't believe in me and they don't believe in the miracles, so Moshe now turns to God and says, but they can hear, v'shamu Mitzrayim ki alita b'kochacha et ha'am hazeh b'kirbo, that you indeed took them out with these great strength. Va'amuril Yosheva Aretz Azot Shemu Ki Ata Hashem Bikerav Amazeh. And moreover, people will know that you're in the midst of these people. She'ayin ba'ayin ra'ata Hashem. You revealed yourself to them, referred to Har Sinai. Va'anancha omed aleihem. Now going back to what I said, and your cloud is really upon them, protecting them. So again, all the things that God had said or hinted at in terms of these people don't recognize me, Moshe is saying, yeah, let's consider that for a second. You have taken care of them. You have stood there. You have protected them. Uvamud ananto lech lefneim yom uvamud esh laila. And you are there protecting them as they go in day and protect them at night. V'hamata et ha'amazek ishachad. And now you're going to kill all of these people in an instant? V'omru ha'goyim. Okay, what, you know, how is this going to play to the non-Jews? They're going to say, "Mil bilti yecholat Hashem leviyat ha'amazeh ala aretz shenishba lahem." God was unable, which means again, you're concerned how people are going to understand your power or have not understood your power. If you do something severe to the Jewish people, that is going to go against this issue of people recognizing your power, because they'll say you just couldn't do it. V'yishchatein b'midbar, and God couldn't bring them to the land of Israel, which means it was too tough, it was too hard, the conquest was too much. Now this is actually such a fascinating argument, and as I said, I want you to keep this in mind, to what Moshe is saying as a response to what God is saying, to really what is the perspective, because we'll see some who may well have either ignored this or at least downplayed this. Vata yigdal na koach Hashem kasher dibarta lemor. And now, again, to give God more strength, as it were, and again, the focus over here is on God's power and on strength and on God's protection of the people. And now he goes to a shortened version, if you do want to make the comparison, to the tefillah that we know that Moshe says or is taught after the golden calf. Hashem erech apayim v'rav chesen osei avon v'feshev v'nakelu yonakeh v'oked avon avot abanim al shlishim v'al reveyim slach na lavon amazek goch hasdecha v'kesh nasata la'amazem mimitzrayim v'adhena. Forgive these people. And again, I'm not going to every single word, but this is a shortened version of what we call the Yud Gimel Midot, of what we normally say multiple times on Yom Kippur, right, during the Slichot. And then in Pasuk Kaf, Yom Hashem Selachti Kedvarecha. And God says, okay, I will forgive them as is your words. But I don't want to stop there. V'ulam, however, but let's pause there nonetheless. This phrase, Yom Hashem Selachti Kedvarecha, some of us can be fooled by the piyut, or the piyutim that we say, and the prayers that we say, and you would think that this phrase was actually said by God after the Chayta Egel, when Moshe gives that longer prayer. It's not there. You can go back and check. It wasn't there last time I looked. It's here. Which means when the tefillah is created, we take the prayer of Moshe from the golden calf, and we take God's response over here, but not the continuation of the response. Just cut it off. That's all we want to bring in right now. But this actually, I'm going to say two things. It's not there, it is here, and it continues. V'ulam chai ani v'imalei kavod Hashem et kol ha'aretz. Again, God's glory will fill the world. Ki kol anashim ha'ra'im et kvodi v'totai. Again, God comes back to these points, the kavod and the otot and the miracles, the signs, wonders. Again, you could just imagine from God's perspective, what is he talking about? He's talking about the 10 plagues, and he's talking about the splitting of the sea, and he's talking about all the things that have been done along the way to get to the point that we are right now. And he says, "Asher Ositi b'Mitzrayim uvamidbar." Okay, now you, very, very clear. V'yenasu oti zeh eser pamim v'lo shemu b'koli. Nonetheless, despite all of this, again, God being manifest among them, they keep on testing me, they don't listen to me. And then he goes on to say that these people will not enter the land. Imirot aretz shenishbati lavotam v'kol menatzai lo yiru. Those who made me upset will not be able to enter the land. V'avdi kalev. Now, this is the verse that really is the main verse that I'm going to focus on today. V'avdi kalev, and my servant kalev, ekev haita ruach acheret imo, because he had a different spirit, v'yamalei acharai, and he came and he followed after me. V'aviotiv el ha'aretz asheba shama v'zaro yerishena. I'm going to bring him to the land, and his descendants will inherit the land. And here we now begin to realize that even though we were at this point on the cusp of the land of Israel, now we're going to turn around and start wandering and start going in a different direction, and this will be, in a certain sense, the beginning of a new part of Sefer Bamidbar that now we will be wandering out of the desert for all these years, which is till now the trajectory was really quite clear and the direction that we were going in was predictable. It's at this point that things change. Now, when we had that even a third of a verse, Vavdi Kalev Ekevaita Ruach Acheret Imo, if you want to go to half a verse, Vemalei Acharai, so does that sound to us as something which is positive or something which is negative? And I'm sorry even for asking that, because it sounds quite positive. Kalev was different. All the others are punished. All the others can't go in. But Kalev is different. Kalev had Ruach Acheret. Now the question again is, what does Ruach Acheret mean? But so far he's called Avdi Kalev. Not all that many people in Tanakh are called my servant by God. Ruach Acheret is this other term. V'yemalei Acharai. And he is the one who stayed and follows God. So let's, as I said, pay attention to this. Rav Hirsch, in source number 2, focuses primarily on the Avdi Kalev and says, Hu kam b'nemanut, he came and arose faithfully, ubelo mora, without any fear, l'mana emet, and he fought for truth, shela inyana eloki, for the divine truth, which means, again, he has faith in God, he fights for truth, he fights for the divine truth. Again, why is he called Eved Avdi, an Eved Hashem? V'kach zachai l'karei Eved Hashem. And that's why he is a servant of God, because he fights for the divine. Shehu tor elyon sh'adam ha'poel l'man Hashem. That is the term which is used for the person who fights for God. Now, I'm going to be careful here, because I think it's a wonderful interpretation. The only thing I wonder if it's true. And I'll explain myself completely, but you're going to have to give me a couple of minutes. Because what he's saying over here is what's special about Kalev is he fought for God. Now, of course, a question is going to emerge, which most of the commentaries that emerge from the school of the Baalei HaTosfot ask the question. One of them will tell us that the question was first asked by one of the members of the school, the Bechor Shor, even though I didn't see it in the Bechor Shor's commentary, but I'll admit I did not look all around. I just looked on this verse over here, and I did not see him saying it. But they're all going to ask the same question. There was another guy. Who's the other one? Yehoshua. Yeah, what happened to Yehoshua? Why isn't Yehoshua being mentioned in this context? And they give then an answer which is debatable. So let's jump right into it. Source number 3, Reb Chaim Paltiel, Vavdi Kalev Tema. Lama lo izkir Yehoshua? This is a little shocking. Why isn't Yeshua being mentioned in this context? If we're going to talk about those who followed God, he also followed God. V'yesh lomar, no, one could say, l'fi shelo hayu l'Yeshua banim, because Yeshua didn't have children, lo yachol lomar v'zar'o. It couldn't have said by him that his children will inherit Yerushana, l'kach lo izkir Yehoshua. Therefore, Yeshua is not mentioned. By the way, I'll mention, just parenthetically, that whether Yeshua had children or not is actually debated. There is a verse in Divrei Hayamim which gives the lineage of Yeshua, and then it says, and Nun had a son Yeshua, and then it stops. So the fact that it stops then gives you this idea that he didn't have any children, and perhaps that's pshat. On the other hand, the Gemara works very hard to tell you that he actually did have children, although he didn't have sons. So if any of you will be upset with this distinction, because it doesn't say, you have to be very careful now reading the various Baalei HaTosfot, because what does it say by Yehoshua? It says, well, his descendants. By Kalev, his descendants. So why not by Yeshua's descendants? I don't know, maybe some of you have heard about Benot Tzlavchad and the fact that he doesn't have sons. Why should that necessarily stop all of this? So I'll say, as far as the Gemara is concerned, he got married. Actually, the woman that he got married to was Rachav HaZonah, whatever the word Zonah actually really means. It's quite possible the word Zonah does not mean prostitute, but rather means somebody who owns, who provides to Zonah, who provides food. So therefore, she may have owned a little makolet, and therefore she's Rachav HaZonah, and some people have dirty minds, and therefore they didn't realize that there was that possibility. Although the Gemara then plays her up as being the most attractive woman who ever lived, and even merely to state her name is something which is quite problematic for one's spiritual sense. But on top of all of that, if she was she a Canaanite or not a Canaanite? Was he allowed to marry her? And as I said, this becomes this whole subtext, which when I can give a whole shiur just on that marriage and those children and her status and why he could marry her, but I'm not. I'm just mentioning that when it says, oh, he didn't have any children, that's something which, as far as the Gemara is concerned, is actually debatable. The Moshe of Zkenim, again, also comes from the Balei HaTosfot, Vavdi Kalev, again, Tema, Lama Lo Iskir Yoshua, Shere Gam Hu Malei Acharei Hashem, V'yishlom Afisha, Lo Yilu Yoshua Banim, Lo Yecholo Mavizaro Yerushena. No, I just read that, sorry. Moshe of Zkenim, Vavdi Kalev, Ekevata Ruach Acharei Timo, Hiksha Bet Shin is the Bechor Shor, Lama Lo Iskir Gam Kin Yoshua, Re Gam Hu Mila Acharei Hashem, Kamo Kalev, V'tir Shlo Yilu Yoshua Banim, So as I said, if he has daughters, then that becomes a little bit more complicated. Rashi over here, right? And again, the only reason we did the Moshe of Zkenim as well is to see the Bechor Shor. Rashi is going to explain what this Ruach Acheret means. And apparently he's troubled by the Acheret. Because he could have just said he had spirit. Why does it say Acheret? Why does it say he has other spirit? Now, of course, the other spirit should be, and we weren't bothered by that at all, because this other spirit is compared to the Meraglim. The Meraglim had a negative spirit, and Kalev was independent. He was different. Rashi writes, source 5, Shtei Ruchot, Ruach Acheret indicates two spirits, Echad Bapeh, V'Echad Balev. Now, the thing you should pay attention to is how this concept of Ruach in that verse, in Rashi's formulation, will move over to the heart, to matters of the heart, to the Lev. The Lev now is really what he's going to focus on. All you need to see is how many times the word Lev is going to come in this comment of Rashi, and then you'll realize that switch that took place. I'll also show you exactly why that shift took place, but give me a second or two. But he has two Ruchot, Echad B'Peh V'Echad B'Lev, which means that within, he had a different spirit internally compared to what was coming out of his mouth. L'meraglim amar, ani machem beitza. To the Meraglim he either said or implied, I'm with you completely. U'belibo, note his heart, u'belibo, but internally, hayalomar ha'emet. The truth was there. L'yedei kein hayabo koach l'hashtikam. And that's why he was able to silence them, because they thought that he was with them. K'mo shenema v'yahas kalev. Because they thought that he was going to go and agree with them. Now notice the verse, the supporting verse, the proof text he's bringing is, well, I have to look at it in context, and something im livavi. Now, of course, it sounds like he's talking about Kalev over here. V'lo kasher im pi, not the mouth. Now, whose heart is that being mentioned in Sefer Yoshua? So first of all, I'll ask you a different point. This, you need something to say Friday night at the table. How old is Yoshua at the point that God sent him? So you can say that you don't know, or you can read the next source. V'ikshu b'nei Yehuda el Yoshua b'Gilgal v'yomei lav Kalev ben Yefuna k'nizi ata yadata t'davar shediber Hashem Moshe ish Elokim al odotai v'alodotecha b'kadesh barnea. And the people of the tribe of Yehuda approach Yoshua and say, do you know anything about this whole story about Kalev in terms of inheritance, which is really the continuation that we've been discussing over here? Yoshua responds and says, Ben arba'im shana anochi b'shloach Moshe eved Hashem oti mikadosh barnea. I was 40 years old when I was sent l'ragel to Aretz, v'yishivat dvar kasher im levavi. And I brought back the message as was in my heart, which is very interesting, because now you realize the heart which we're referring to sure sounds to me like it's the heart of Yoshua, which Rashi just now brought it in order to indicate it was the heart of Kalev. But apparently he's also addressing the question that Balei HaTosfot would, you know, bring in, hold it, where's Yoshua? So he's telling us, you know, any kid, right, the whole question who Rashi wrote for, if Rashi wrote for adults or we wrote for children. But over here, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe claimed, he wrote a whole commentary on Rashi, and he claimed that Rashi was only addressing children in his commentary. He certainly has things to say to adults as well. That's the whole basis of his approach. And if you don't believe with that assumption, then his whole commentary is of less value. If you agree with his assumption, so then his commentary is of far more value. Yes, you seem surprised. Leave it. Anyway, you've gained more information. good, you can bring up this point. So over here, no. So therefore, somebody who reads will say, oh, look at this. You know, in terms of that question, by the way, the question still stands. Why isn't Yoshua being rewarded? But over here, as far as his heart being pure, Rashi's kind of telling you, yeah, Kalev's his heart is pure, and the heart of Yoshua is pure. The difference is that by Kalev, it's Echad Bepev, Echad Belev. That by Kalev, he gave them the impression he's with them. Maybe Yoshua never gave them that impression. We're going to go back soon and take a closer look. And then he continues to say, he is Yoshua. It's been 45 years since then. He indeed says that this is the land that was supposed to go to Yoshua, and this land, Al-Kain Haita Chevron, sorry, to Kalev, Al-Kain, Pasuk Yedal, Al-Kain Haita Chevron, Le-Kalev, Ben Yifunak Nizi, Le-Nachala, Ad Yom Hazeh. Ya'an Asher Milei Acharei Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Again, it didn't quite say the word Eved Hashem, but he follows the Spirit, he follows what God said. Okay, so here you have, as I said, an important verse to consider, and now you realize that's why Rashi was citing it. The other thing that Rashi was citing, or really what Rashi was citing, was source number 7, which is the Midrash Rabbah. On the other hand, I learned Rashi with Nechama Leibowitz, and she said that at least 98-99% of the time, Rashi is cutting and pasting from earlier sources and just brings it on the verse to help explain. And this is what Rashi was cutting and pasting from over here. Source number 7, Vayas Kalev, which is interesting because this is actually... previously, this is when he silences them. Originally he said, now again, the question is the Medrash overstating this? Did he actually say it or did he give the impression, I'm with you? We'll try to note also why or how he would have given this impression. But in his heart, the truth was there. Shenemar, and he quotes that pasuk in Yeshua, Vashevoto davar kasher im livavi. So again, Yeshua, as my heart was pure, his heart is pure. And my brothers who went up with me, the other spies, they're the ones who caused the people to be afraid. You know, when they all came, they said, no, we can trust Kalev. He stood up on a chair. And all the people were screaming, Moshe, and he silenced them all. He silenced them. They thought that he was going to say Lashon Hara. We're also going to consider this from the text. L'fichach shatku, therefore he signs patak va'amar, aluna alev yirashnu ata ki nochal nuchala. V'yad chalku kenegdo v'amu lo nuchal alot ala'am. So now, if we've already read all of this, give me a couple seconds because I want to read the verses themselves. But first, we're going to begin to realize that this idea of Yeshua having another spirit, which till now we read in a very positive sense, and we were pretty convinced it's a positive sense, we're going to see that not everybody sees it that way. We're going to start with the Maharal in source number 8. Ruach Acheret, Klomar, She'in Perish Ruach Acheret Mimash Shehoyu L'Meraglim, not in compared to the Meraglim, which is exactly the way that I read it. He said, don't read it that way. Davimash L'Meraglim Ruach Acheret, She'zeh In Lomar, De'afilu Peh Acher Hayah Lahem Gamken, She'im Ginua Ta'aretz V'Kalev Shibecha Ta'aretz. They insulted the land, or they said negative things about the land, and Kalev had nice things to say. That's not the other spirit. It means within one's midst. It's not compared to the others, it's compared to what came out of his mouth. So it wasn't the Ruach Acheret compared to the others, it was compared to what he said. Although this is a little strange, yes, it's a little difficult, and I don't understand it either. I'm with you, understand it perfectly well then. Is because ultimately the thing that he says is exactly the spirit that they have, so why is the Maharal working so hard over here about this Ruach Acheret? The Ramban over here says also, Kalev and not Yoshua. Kipirish l'Kalev scharo sheresh ha'aretz ha'shebashama v'schar Yoshua ein ra'uy l'farsho ata. can't really say the reward that Yeshua is going to get, because that's to take Moshe's place. So it's really interesting, you know, for all of our lo mukdam muchar, and for all of that in the, it seems to be the Ramban is saying, yeah, God knows exactly what reward he's getting, and the reward that Yeshua is going to get, he's going to take over from Moshe, but we can't say this right now, because then it'll imply that Moshe is actually not going to go in either, something that we don't necessarily know that. We're going to now see three different commentaries who are all much more involved in the Kabbalistic tradition, all of them heavily influenced by the Arizal, and or at least living within the same cultural milieu. Sifte Kohen is a student of the Ari. Vavdi Kalev, Yeshua lo amar, Lefisha bitfilat rabo, astava ho'ilulo. The reason Yeshua was saved, because Moshe prayed for him, which is also fascinating in terms of free will and so on. Yeah, Yeshua was saved because Moshe prayed, which of course raises all kinds of other questions. Why doesn't Moshe pray for all of them? Why doesn't, you know, what exactly is going on? Aval Kalev, hu me'atzmo tarach v'nishtatach al kivrei ha'avot ad sheruach acheret hayta imo. Okay, so let's just pause there for a second. Kalev, and we're going to see soon, he had a different spirit. Why? Because he went to the graves of, okay, if we know that, Chazal, Rashi quotes it, and he prays by Chevron, and that's why he saved. Shasa shnei dvarim. Achad, shemilei acharesh amar alena lev yichol nuchal. One, it causes him to be able to say, come, we can do it. Va'ot sheba shama v'nishtach al kivri avot, ma shelo asa Yeshua. Yeshua didn't go and pray. V'af al pisho Yeshua amar, ha'aretz ha'shavarnu bat tova, even though Yeshua will later say, no, this is a good land, im chafetz banu Hashem, if God will want. V'chin gam haya kalev imo shenem Yeshua v'kalev karu begadim. You know, the two of them were together. Od lo amar Yeshua l'fi she'en lo ben. And he goes back to this point, but you realize he just now drew a distinction between Kalev and Yeshua, and he also puts Kalev in, I'll call it, a far more precarious situation than Yeshua was in, because Yeshua already had that blessing from Moshe, so the chances of him being successful have increased, you know, incredibly. But we still don't know exactly what's going to be with Kalev, because Kalev is still one of the others, but he stands up from the group, he goes over to and prays. And therefore, you have, in a certain sense, the prayer of Moshe on the one hand and the prayer of Kalev on the other hand. And therefore, this Ruach HaCheret, this spirit, which is very interesting, what he's implying is that the prayer is the spirit. And he is a man of spirit and of spirituality. And he realizes he's in a precarious situation and he prays. So I'm saying all of that really does make it interesting. The Al-Sheikh, again, also in Sfat, 16th century, Vavdi Kalev Ekevaya Ruach, Lemar, Al Yeshuar Inyan Kalev Libilti Osa Avira Klal Bilvad. Don't think about this that it's just that Kalev was not going to do something wrong. Ki im la omeid b'nisayon shiyoter mi osa mitzvah. To stand up to this kind of a test is even greater than the performance of a mitzvah. Ki nehaya koach machtia imo. And now he spells it out v'kavashoto, because there was some kind of a poison there that he was susceptible to that could have captured him and caused him to sin. V'hu ma shekatav b'tchilat ha-parsha, ki koach avon ma shehu Yehuda v'rosh shifto laviv, hi kirna k'tonet bincha? Oto mashchit v'ruach ra'a shenivra b'avon ahu, haya mukhan l'karev chit ki yotzibo l'zera Yehuda, ki avera goreret avera. Now this is absolutely shocking, what he's saying over here. But let me try to make sure, I didn't translate every word, so let's make sure that we understand that he's saying. First of all, he's making us note, like he's saying, please pay attention. What tribe Kalev is from? He's from Yehuda, by the way. What tribe is Yoshua from? From Ephraim, from Yosef. So if I would have had a voracious perspective on the Meraglim and say, well, which two tribes will be successful tribes in terms of this episode, I think we could have predicted these two, and certainly working backwards when we realize, well, look at this, it's Yehuda and Yosef, and now there's echoes of the future, Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, which means we have two special tribes over here who have the faith still, perhaps despite all of Am Yisrael not having it. But what the Al-Sheikh just now said, yeah, okay, all that's nice. I mean, He didn't address all that. Yeah, well, that's nice. But there's another problem. And that is that Yehuda was not always Yehuda in the sense. Yehuda was not always this spiritual hero. And Yehuda has some skeletons in the closet. Matter of fact, if we're going to now try, I'm going to exaggerate this point now that he's saying. There was a time that the various sons of Yaakov, or the tribes, go off on a mission. And when they come back and they bring a report, they actually lie about the report. And that's exactly what he's referring to over here. And they claim that Yosef has been killed, and they also imply they have nothing to do with it, which means this report is a lie. This report, you know, really is the core of Sinat Chinam. This report is something which is going to later on have an impact in terms of the structure of the Second Temple, which will be by Sinat Chinam, by hatred. And he's saying, yeah, but the instigator, the leader, the one who is involved in this, is actually Kalev from Yehuda. So therefore, Avera Goreret Avera, therefore the negative spirit that is created at that point during the sin. So for all you thinking, but no, that's in the past and that's done already, realize that Kalev coming from the tribe of Yehuda, part of his spiritual DNA is also not just being part of a conspiracy and bringing over a false report. It's actually being the leader of it and bringing the false report. And, you know, and this should be shocking because, I mean, as far as we were concerned, Kalev was the good guy. And really what is happening over here is the Al Shech is saying, don't take for granted Kalev's success. So, you know, we read in the Midrash before, they all thought, right, in their minds, oh, Kalev is with us. So he's actually building a case for that Midrash and saying, yeah, of course Kalev is with you. Not only is he with you, he's going to be the leader of all of this and just trust Kalev to do the right thing, which in this context, from their perspective, is really the right thing, but from our perspective is the wrong thing. And he goes on to say, Ukamosha katavnu, shakin lachnia koach hu trach lishtateach okivrei avot. So really what's taking place now is that Kalev is trying to heal that spiritual sin within his DNA where this took place and says, yeah, I know this is part of my personality. I know that that sin is waiting for me. I know that this is something that I can make a mistake with. And therefore he goes and he prays, you know, let those forces not, rather, instead of lying to Yaakov, he's praying by Yaakov's grave. Instead of being disconnected from Yaakov, he's trying to connect to Yaakov and Yitzchak and Avraham. And so Rivka Rechav Aleah. Uveze yom atdeh ma sheni machzik tova lekalev. Huekev hayta ruach acheret imo lachtio. So look how he's reading this. Hayala ruach acheret, he had a different spirit in him to cause him to sin. But he captured that spirit. Ve'im koze kavashoto ve'yamalei acharai ve'lo acharai ruach ahu. So I'm saying this is just completely fascinating because what the Alshach just now did is he read the whole thing in the opposite way that we would have read it. And what he's really telling us is why Kalev deserves to be honored. Because that spirit was pursuing him to cause him to sin. But this is one of these cases where if somebody reaches out to God, and even though they have all the reasons to sin in the world, be it their DNA, their parents' DNA, everything else, but they ask God for help. And that's the prayer. He's asking God for help. So God goes and helps him over here. And that's Umalei Acharei Hashem. Al Kain V'Yovetiv. That's why I'm bringing him. V'hu, Ki Gam Yeshua Gam Hu Hayta Ruach Acheret Imo. And now, okay, we've already dissed Yeshua. Now let's go after Yosef. And he says, truth is, Yeshua also had a different spirit. Me'asher Hivi Yosef Et Dibatam Ra'ah. Because Yosef is the one who brings the Lashon Hara. So therefore, you know, even though I said a couple moments ago, and I had you all convinced, if there are any good tribes over here, it's really Yehuda and Yosef. And what the Alshach is saying, if there's any two problematic tribes over there in Bereshit, it's Yoshua and Yosef. Sorry, it is Yosef and Yehuda. And therefore, Kalev should have been the one who leads the rebellion. And Yosef is the one who should be the one telling the Lashon Hara. And therefore, he also has this spiritual DNA, which could be taking him away from the service of God. But why was he saved? He now was saved because of the prayer of Moshe, which means that, again, it's similar to what we saw a moment before. The prayers are different. Moshe really saves Yehoshua from this, and Kalev saves himself from this. And I think that that's enough in terms of this source. There's obviously a lot more there. One more, and that's the Or HaChaim in source number 12. And he says, "Achin pirush haketuv hu al derech vavdi kalev, v'tam sheni korei oto avdi hu ekev pirush scha asher hayta ruach acheret imo, shu hagam l'sheshua gam kin lo niatz Hashem imraglim, afal pikein zaya lo sibat filat Moshe tzol mi yetzahara." Again, there is the Yetzirah that Moshe has to pray and save him from. And then he goes, and furthermore, the same kind of idea that Kalev is the one who then has to go and pray by themselves. And I'm skipping towards later on. Mishaba, Virai Ledobin, Itzomi Menu Nanilo Schar Kosem Mitzvah, which Vizeh, Eino Biyoshua, Kiloita Ruach Acheretimo, Lahatoto, Biderech Asechel, Kimoshemano. And again, he makes it sound very much that the Ruach Acheret in Kalev is something which is negative that has to be countered. They all see the Ruach as being something which is negative, which is really quite surprising, because as I said, when we read it, we would not have even had a hint that that was the case. Now, there's one more thing that I do want to touch, and then we're going to dive into what I think is actually taking place over here, but we're going to need to use the Netziv to get there. But let me just say something that we've already pointed out in Bereshit. And the first one that I really heard this from was my son, Matityahu. And I asked him, who said it? He said, no, this is what they said in his Beit Midrash. He learned in the yeshiva. He taught in the yeshiva in Otniel. And essentially, they look at the Yosef Yehuda divide as the division. Well, there's actually two ways of saying it. First, I'll say it as Chazal say it, that one is the tzaddik, the other is the Baal Tshuva. Right? Yehud is the Baal Tshuva, and Yosef is the tzaddik. So that creates an interesting dichotomy. But the way they learned it in the yeshiva was that Yosef is the Litvak, and Yehuda is the Chassid. And there are various sources that one could bring to defend this approach. I'm not going to bring them all right now. It's that Yosef always controls his emotions, and Yehuda is like all over the place. And Yehuda makes mistakes, and he picks himself up. And it's a question of topologies and a question of attitudes. And of course, this is one of these things that one would be very guilty of taking 18th, 19th, 20th century perspective and reading them back into ancient sources, which is a terrible sin. But sometimes anyway, it gives you some insight. But as I said, this divide over here between the two would be interesting in the sense of Yehuda the Baal Tshuva, is Kalev involved with them? Again, the Echad B'Pev, Echad B'Lev is an interesting perspective, while Yehoshua may not be involved with them. So let's just keep that in mind as we go on. Okay, the Netziv. And you can get a little bit out of that in source 14, which is by Rabbi Shimon Sofer. He's a grandson of the Chatam Sofer, I believe grandson of the Chatam Sofer, who was killed in Auschwitz at the age of 95 or 94 years old. So that's in source 14 a little bit, where he discusses at least the Baalei Tshuva and the Tzaddikim in terms of the Meraglim. As I said, I'm not going to go further into that. Now, let's go over the Netziv. The Netziv is going to tell us something about the Meraglim that he believes is so important that he wrote an introduction to the book of Bamidbar, and he said this is like the major issue of the Sefer Bamidbar. And he goes, so now, whenever you have big theories, you run the risk of forcing everything into your big theory. I mean, the 19th century was very much into big theories, and very much, especially Germany, you have big, big theories. And then all the details fit in, and then kind of historically, what happens to most of these big theories is that they have some validity, but they're over-applied. I don't know what to do with the Netziv. I don't want to knock the Netziv too much for obvious reasons. Most obvious is I'll get pushback. So therefore, I'm not going to do it too much. But I'm going to tell you what he does and what he says, and we're going to look at a little bit inside. He essentially believes that the major tension which is taking place is that the existence that we have in the desert is a magical, mystical, divine existence, while eventually we're going to have to go into Eretz Yisrael and lead a more normative existence. Okay, so that should be clear. Now the question is, when does this shift take place and what are the implications of this shift? So for him, it's going to be something that he's going to have in mind every single step of the way of Sefer Bamidbar, because he believes this is what's taking place over here. Now, I do want to go to Source 15 and start with Shlach Lecha Anashim. Now, part of what Rashi's going to do with Shlach is Rashi's going to say, well, how do we reconcile? Over here, it's a divine command, while in Sefer Devarim, it sounds like it's grassroots, as I pointed out at the very beginning. Shlach Lanashim, Pirish Rashi, L'da'atcha. Ani, Einu Matzav Chalacha. I'm not commanding you to do it, which is very nice, because now Rashi has reconciled a little bit. God says, okay, you want to do it, do it, which means there's a background to the conversation. It's because Rashi has these Sefer Devarim and Sefer Bamidbar to contend with. So he writes, Vadei Lashon Shlach Lecha Eino B'mashma Elo Kamo Kach Lecha Lech Lecha, which means it doesn't sound that way, Shehu Mitzaveh Kimashmo. Ela Hechrach Lefereish Hachi Kimvor B'Sefer Devarim Shemitchila Achema Yisro B'Kshu Zot. He goes, obviously Rashi is forced, as it were, to consider what it says in Devarim, that first Bnei Yisrael wanted. Avo mikol makom, I efshar lakim gama mikra ze legamre. He goes, nonetheless, you can't twist this verse completely. Why? Ve'ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto. Because at the end of the day, we have to take verses seriously. And you can't just say, well, what it says is not what it means. Od yesh lasum lev ma ra'ui Yisrael bikan lazeh, v'lo b'yutim b'chorev. Like, why now is this happening and not earlier? Ela, kacha inyan, devadei lefi halichot olam hateva. So now, his way of putting this will be, his whole concept, lemala men hateva, or lefi hateva. Are we going to have a supernatural or a natural existence? Lefi halichot olam hateva, according, if you're going to live a natural life, haya hashiluach nachutz lerot echu be'ezet tzad lechvosh haaretz. That if the conquest will be a natural conquest, then we need to know exactly what the situation is and how do you go about doing it. You need to send spies. Sending spies is the right thing to do if the conquest is natural. And he says, Ukumasha kotev Ramban zal, Ukimuvar v'lashon Yisrael sh'amu nishlacha nashim lefaneinu v'yichparnu lanu et haaretz v'shivenu otanu davar et haderech ha'shena leba. Let's go take a look and see. We can realize then what the price. Again, you need to know where to enter, how to enter, when to enter. You need advanced scouts. Ve'atarim asher navo aleim, which cities to go to. Hare lo bikshu ladata tovahi imra, that the whole issue here is not a value judgment. Is this a good land or a bad land? Ve'od kama devarim imra ui lekanes la'aretz Yisrael lo, or whether it's worthwhile to enter or no. Lo istapku adayin b'zeklal. That's not the issue. Rak ledat, rather exclusively to know one thing, and that is eich yichavshu, how to do the kibush, how to do the contest. V'zevadai ra'ui umuchrach, and that is certainly necessary and correct, im hakvisha hu b'derech hateva. If it's going to be natural, then sending the spies is the right thing to do. Again, what's he trying to explain? He's trying to explain why God says send spies. Aval im hu lamala miderech hateva, but if the conquest will be supernatural, kasher hochu ad heina bamidbar, as was their existence until this point in the desert, ein makon l'shlichut klal, and that's the case, there's no reason to spend the spies whatsoever. She'ein devar chutzeit v'pnei tferet uzoid barach. Why in the world would they need to want to do something? Now he uses this phrase, tferet uzo, and he'll use the word tferet in a certain way. And I'm just going to explain it right now as the divine providence. Vinei b'mdam b'chorev udvchila nisiyatam misham haya be'emet b'da'atam likanes b'zeh ha'ofin l'eretz Yisrael. So this is actually fascinating. Because it's if he is explaining to us that it's all dependent on the people of Israel. Originally, they had understood that entering Israel would be something which is supernatural. And if that's the case, you don't need to send anybody. As they moved away from Sinai, they came to this realization that such an existence is very difficult.
Because
That God in their midst creates a situation that everything they say, God hears immediately. Now, this is all going to be very funny in a certain sense. Immediately, they get punished. And to live in such an existence where you are in the palace of the king, and all the time you're getting immediately punishments. That's what he means by Teferet Tuzo. He says this is incredibly difficult. They just could not live this way. And he calls this again, how the terminology is less important to me, but his distinction between being in the divine presence, being in the palace, that he calls Tferet. And on the other hand, of just having God on top of them as the king, he calls Malchut. But he says that Tferet is something which is overwhelming, because if they live that way, they get immediately and severely punished for anything they did. And he'll go on to say, because then the Hashkacha is on top of them, and this is really quite overwhelming. And he says, he continues, 1 second, right? Therefore, they request this, and God agrees that the conquest will now be of a different nature, basically of nature and not supernatural. Even more so, once the prophecy of Eldad and Medad was said, that Moshe is going to die, Yeshua is going to come in, he's saying, by definition, Moshe's existence is one which will bring about the supernatural, but if it's only Yeshua, then it changes. And look how he tries to prove this point. He says, Moshe thought that, it never occurred to him that he would not be able to pray and change this. So I have to pause and explain this a little bit, and then we have to get back into the text itself. What he's saying is that we have a tradition. That's Chazal. It says that any positive nevuah must come true. Any negative nevuah is conditional. So a negative nevuah means we can fix it. But he's saying this nevuah that Moshe will die and Yeshua will go in, is that a negative or it's positive? He goes, oh, for Yeshua it's positive, so therefore it has to happen. Now that's highly debatable. I mean, again, I said, I don't want to pick on the Nativ too much. That's highly debatable. If you were to ask Yeshua, what do you prefer? You prefer to be the leader, prefer that Moshe Rabbeinu stays alive. I do not believe for a second that Yeshua would say that no, this is a good thing. That losing his teacher, losing Moshe Rabbeinu, I cannot imagine this. But I'm just going to say that he goes a little bit far over here. And then he continues and he says, "Tikolz man shemoshe manhigador, who elah halichotador," when Moshe's leading the way, so then it's going to be in a different way. But look what he then does. He says, "Umishum halchi." Therefore, b'milchemet Amalek, shashaita notenet shetiem b'milchemat tnufa b'derech hateva. Now this is a little confusing, because this is not after they left Sinai. This is before they got to Sinai. Oh, but this had to be derech hateva. Kimavuar b'makomo nistalek Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe disappears. V'tifa Yeshua v'hu achazat acherev. So therefore, Yeshua is the one who's going in the natural way. He takes the sword. Well, Moshe didn't exactly disappear. Moshe lifts up his hands, and Moshe's praying, and Moshe's doing things, and maybe that had some impact on the victory as well. So I'm going to say it again. The Nitziv has an idea. He's going to fit everything into this idea in order to make it work. But nonetheless, he goes on, and he'll say, but now when it's time to go into the land, it has to be naturally, therefore they need meraglim. And God knows it can't be, and therefore the meraglim, it comes out according to all of this, meraglim is the right thing to do. And why is the right thing to do? Because if they live under the way of Tiferet, then the Jewish people will end up being destroyed.
Therefore,
הוא להנתך, הוא משמעות לך, הוא להנתך, היינו שמו שהיה טוב בעיניו שלא יכלו ישראל חס ושלום, וכמו שאמר בעצמו, ויתב בעיניי. That Moshe thinks it's a good thing, and why is it a good thing? Because otherwise the Jewish people will be completely destroyed if they continue to live in this supernatural way. Now, what just now emerges, according to this, it's positive. Source 16 we're not going to read. You can have it as your homework if you wish. This is the Nitziv's introduction to the book, where, again, he tells you this is what's really going on in the book, this whole shift between the supernatural and the natural. But now what I want to do, we only have a couple of minutes left, I want to go back and I want to read what actually took place when the spies come back. Because there's step by step. And again, in the back of my mind is the Nitziv's argument that sending the spies is the right thing. Why is it the right thing? Because we can't live on this other existence. Now, if it's going to be natural, we really have to make a military analysis, which means, is the mission of the spies essentially a spiritual mission, or is it a military mission? If it's a military mission, it's very, very different from spiritual. So now let's read. V'yeshuvu mitor ha'aretz miketz abrim shana. Now notice something. Everything at this point will be in plural, all the spies. V'yechu, v'yavo, right? El Moshe v'aron el kol adap b'nei Yisrael. V'yeshivu otam davar v'kol eda v'yerumet pri'aretz. All in plural. V'yisapru lo v'yomru. Again, all plural. Banu al aretz esher shelachtanu v'gam zvat chalavash v'zer priya. So the land itself, right, flows of milk and honey. But Ephes ki az ha'am ha'yoshev ba'aretz v'arim b'tzirot gedolot ma'od v'gam min ha'anak ra'inu sham amalek yoshev ba'aretz ha'negev v'chiti v'yuzi v'moria yoshev b'harigni yoshev al hayam v'yidei yadein. So I just want to pause here for a second. If the Nitziv is right, and everything now is natural, and the military analysis is that they're too strong for us and we're not ready and we can't do this, why is there anything wrong at this point? Again, things are going to get worse when we move on, but I just want to point out, at this point, at least theoretically, according to the Nitziv, they're right. They're sent there to give a military analysis. They give a military analysis. As I said, I think that point is debatable, but I'm just going in his approach. Then, Vayahas Kalev et ha'am el Moshe, Vayomer alana aleva yirashno ta ki yochal nuchalla. And he says, no, we can do it. Now, the whole argument over here between Kalev and between the other spies, it does not at all sound like a spiritual discussion or argument. Actually, notice what or who has been missing from this entire conversation till this point. And the answer is God. Even better than Yeshua, you're right. Yeshua is missing as well, but God is missing. God is not in the discussion. By the way, I want you to keep in mind where we started today, where God's response comes into all of this. And over here, what we find is, and I'm going to say it again, if the Nitziv is correct, and I'm going with this argument, it's a military thing, now you have an argument between two generals. Chief of staff meeting, one general says, we can do it. Another general says, or all the other generals says, we can't do it. And there should not be anything wrong with this. Obviously, or maybe not obviously, I don't think that this is correct. And the other question that you correctly pointed out, but where's Yeshua at this point? Yeshua is missing. Now, other years, what I've pointed out is that if we do take the Nevoah of Eldad HaMedad seriously, and they say that Moshe's going to die, Yeshua's going to come in, and everyone knows about this, so then, again, you can play it out. There are actually some who say that's what motivates the spies. They say, hold it, if Moshe's not going to go in, let's stay with Moshe. Let's stay with him as long as possible. On the other hand, Yeshua can't say anything. Because if Yeshua says, let's go, they're all going to accuse him of hating Moshe and saying, you don't care about Moshe, you want Moshe dead. That's why you just want to, all that you're concerned about is that you want to take over. Slow down a little bit. As I said, that creates a very interesting subtext. I'm not going in that direction today. I'm not going in that direction today. You can read some of this probably into the Shlach HaKadosh. And there's a little bit in the Zohar as well that you can maybe read into this. On the other hand, what happens next is, they say we can't, Kalev says we can, v'anashim ha'shaluim amur lo nuchal lalot et ha'am ki chazakum imenu, we can't, they're too strong. And I'm going to say it again, till this point, if it's derech ha'teva, this is all legitimate. Then, v'yutzidi be'aretz, then they say bad things about the land. Now you can say, oh, that's the sin. But excuse me. And then, okay, give me a second on that, excuse me. And then they say, the land we went to, it's not worth going to. It's one which, it's a bad land. But I want to point out, if these really are military leaders, and really the question right now is, what do we do? And they think that there will be that if Kalev wins out, because people are so ideological, yeah, we can do it, but you can't do it. So therefore, for them, misrepresenting the land in order to save the people, if this is purely military, I don't know why they're wrong about this. This is spin put on in order to prevent a massacre from taking place. And please explain to me, if the whole thing is Derech HaTeva, where and why this spy has ever sinned in this entire episode. Now, am I overstating the Netziv? Most likely. But what I am pointing out is that if I just go, or at least note what's over here, and note something which may or may not be a problem, because it seems to me this is really the Echad Befeb, Echad Velev. What's missing from all of this? And I already said it. God is not in the discussion. God only enters into the story at a very disturbing point. Now, this is part of the problem of what the spies just now said. Instead of causing people to say, okay, this sounds, you know, we need to wait, we need to practice, we need to become soldiers, we need to plan better. Instead, what it causes is mass hysteria. And that's in Perikud Dalet. Vatisa kol ha'edavit nu at kolam yifkua am ba'ayt layla zeh, v'yalinu al Moshe v'al Aron kol b'nei Yisrael. They complain about Moshe, v'yomu leim kol ha'eda, lumatum erin Yisrael. He'll only die in Egypt or in the desert. V'lama Hashem, and that's the first time God gets into the narrative. God is the narrative. When the people bring God to the narrative, why does God hate us so much? V'lama Hashem avi otanu ala aretz hazot limpol b'cherev, noshenu v'teinu levaz, alo tov lanu shuv mitzrayimah. So God's entrance into the story is the people believe the spies that this is something which is a terrible land, we're all going to die, and therefore, although I'm not convinced that's what they're trying to do, but again, I think that this whole read has been a little bit problematic. Then notice what happens. Let's go back, let's get new leaders. Pasuk Hey, V'yipol Moshe v'Aaron al Pneim l'fnei kol ha'al adap b'nei Yisrael, V'yushua ben Nun v'Kalev ben Yefuna. That's where Yeshua now enters into narrative. Min atarim et ha'aretz ki'u b'gdeim. Now they tear their clothing. Vayomru, the two of them say, El kol adap b'nei Yisrael emor, ha'aretz ha'shavarnu ba'latur ota tova aretz ma'od ma'od. The land is a very good land. Don't listen to that last thing. And now God enters into the picture. Im chafetz banu Hashem, ve'vi otanu el aretz hazot na'alanu ha'aretz asher hi'zavad chalav u'dvash, ach ba'Hashem al timrodu. Don't rebel against God. V'Hashem itanu al tir'um. God is with us. Which means when we start where we started today, that God says, you know, why don't they recognize that I'm with them? And now I have to go backwards and ask myself, is this approach of the Netziv, that this whole thing was a military thing, and therefore God is not supposed to be part of the conquest? I find that very hard to accept. Because God's complaint over here was, why haven't they drawn the conclusion that I've done all these miracles for them all the time, I continue to do them now, which means why don't they realize that in terms of the next step? Which means when you see God's response, you realize what I'm doing here. I'm using God as a parshan to explain to me what the sin of the spies was. Instead of starting in the beginning and reading, because then maybe you get a little lost, where we started, we see exactly what God's complaining about. Don't you realize I'm in your midst? Don't you realize that I'm here? Don't you realize I've done miracles? Don't you realize that this is, I'm with you? Like, what is the problem over here? And therefore, I find it very difficult to say, oh no, this was, sending the spies was a military. It goes back to a different point. It can't be because of a military issue based on God's response. Rather, it's something which is spiritual. Go and look at this beautiful land. Go and fall in love with this beautiful land. Go tell the people the next step is that God is going to lead us in on these clouds. God is going to lead us in, and God is going to vanquish all of the enemies. Which means it ends up becoming a very different type of a situation because of the sin over here that takes place. But I'm saying, how could you possibly take God's response out of all of this? And just to strengthen this a little bit more, later on, we find in Source 18 that there are some people, right, the Mapilim, who say, oh, let's go anyway. We're going to go and do it. But they say, we're going to do it. They're going back to this, no, we don't need God. We can do it. No, you can't do it. And Moshe's response actually is that you can't do it without God. And look at the Pasuk Mem Dalet, Ve'apilu lalot elahar el roshahar, Varon brit Hashem Moshe lo mashu bekerev machaneh. And they went, but Moshe wasn't with them. And the Aaron wasn't with them, the Shekhinah wasn't with them, so of course they failed. Which now again, you realize based on this, what was supposed to be based upon the failure. I mean, the last thing that I want to say then is, Yehoshua gets a bracha, but what's the bracha that he gets? right? His name gets changed, right? How does his name get changed? Let's go back now and look at a couple of more things, and then we'll finish up. Source 19 is the names of all of the tribes. Ulamata Ephraim Hoshea ben Nun. It's very interesting. He is not associated with Yosef in an obvious way, but Lamate Yosef, Lamate Menashe Gadi ben Susi. So therefore, this whole fear, as some of them mentioned, oh, but he comes from Yosef, it's really interesting that it's not mentioned over here at all. It's as if, no, he's free of that Diba of Yosef. Afterwards, Eila Shmota, Nashima Shishlach Moshe Torah Ta'aretz, Vikra Moshe La Hoshea ben Nun Yehoshua. And Rashi writes, "Itpalalav Hashem Yoshiacha Me'etzem Raglim." What happens when he gets that hay? Then God is with him, which means Yeshua's perspective is that God is with. So therefore, that first discussion, we can, we can't, whatever, Yeshua can't be part of that discussion. Why? Because God is with him. He doesn't imagine a conquest which is a natural conquest. His whole understanding of this is, of course, God is with us, which means Yeshua not being involved in that first point is because Yeshua is on a higher level. And Yeshua just doesn't see that as a reasonable discussion. Kalev is echad b'peh ve'echad b'lev. Kalev is willing to engage in the discussion of we can or we can't, of God not being with it. And he goes, okay, even according to you, that it's supposed to be natural, we can. That's the echad b'peh. But what's b'lev shalo? In his heart is God. And that's what the Midrash tries to explain. When he gets there, he goes to the Kivrei Avot and he prays, and the spirituality is really there, a part of him. And also, coming to Torah of Yehuda, you also have Yud Hei Vav in Yehuda, and you also have now, in Yehoshua's name, you have God there with them. And therefore, these two tribes, or these two individuals, do have this sense of God being with them. And what I'm using this now in order to understand is that first part, the first discussion, was al derech hateva, and if you follow the Nitziv maybe in a grotesque, exaggerated way, then you can't figure out why they're wrong, and you can't even figure out why they're wrong when they say that the land is a terrible land because you want to protect the people. But on the other hand, it would seem to me that based on God's response, that's not a legitimate approach. That was the wrong discussion, whether we can do it or not. That's an irrelevant discussion. Which means, why are we discussing things which are not relevant? Because the fact is that God is with us. The fact is that God is in our camp. The fact is that the clouds protect us. The fact is that we ate man for breakfast this morning. And the fact is that even when Yeshua went and fought against Amalek, Moshe was still on the mountain and praying. And therefore, those prayers, that supernatural military advantage that we have is ultimately going to be the clinching point in terms of our success. So therefore, it seems to be that the sin of the spies is that they see themselves as spies. The sin of the spies is that they see all of this without God. It becomes that they become, shall we say, non-religious Zionists, and then ultimately they become post-Zionists, because it's just us, there's no God in the equation, and if it's just us, you know what, we can't do it, so why are we bothering anymore? And on the other hand, we have our religious Zionists, you like the way that I put all that in here? We have our religious Zionists saying, God is with us, and if God is with us, then what are you talking about? Of course we're going to succeed.